It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to another 9 to noon show. This the Thursday, the 18th September. It's Thursday, the 18th of September, 2025. You're very welcome along to the program. How you're keeping? We've lots coming up for you. Loads of interesting conversation like we do every day. And this week, there's been some really important conversations as well, which we're glad to be able to host and facilitate. And there's more of that today. If you want to give us a call, by the way, if you want to comment as we go through the morning or raise your own issues or pass on some information or share some good news, 07491 25000. If you want to WhatsApp and text, it's 086 60 25000. You can send voice notes to that number as well, or email comments at highlandradio.com, and that includes you if you're listening to the podcast or our overnight repeat. We really appreciate you listening however you do, and your comments are welcome. Send them in to us and we can pick them up and include them in the next live show. And just to remind you once again, of course, you can watch the show if you're at home, working in the home. You can watch us on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, or if you're in a nursing home or any facility, shared facilities like that, you can open up your smart TV and watch us on YouTube as well. We're across our Facebook pages, streaming on all of them today. There's been a bit of an issue with Facebook this week. And we're on the X platform as well. Right, now let's look at the papers this morning. The Tyrconnell Tribune, they lead with quotes and conversation with the Martin sisters. Clerical sex abuse, renewed calls for cold case inquiry. The Martin sisters from Coolback and Fannett, who suffered clerical sexual abuse by paedophile curate Con Cunningham in the 1970s, said this week's apology from Monsignor Kevin Gillespie allows them healing and to finally close their wounds. They've thanked all those who facilitated and contributed in playing to resolve the issues raised over many years. Their family circle, medical, legal, counselling, clergy and support services in finding a resolution to their trauma. Now, we had both Paula and Margaret on the programme earlier this week. That was packaged as a standalone programme which was streamed out last night on YouTube or Facebook. So if you haven't heard their story, I would direct you to that. You don't have to search for anything. The entire story is there, posted last night across our social medias. And it starts off too with a conversation with John McAteer, the journalist who I'm quoting here in the newspaper, who outlined the case, Confreel, his movements, the inaction, etc. And then we move on to the sisters, who talk of their experiences and their long road to that apology and the importance of it, and when they reached the times in their lives that they felt that they wanted to progress it, etc. It's about 45, 50 minutes, well worth listening to. The Derry People, Donegal News this morning. A much needed childcare facility in the east of the county remains stalled more than 14 months after its planning permission was appealed to on Bord Pleanála, despite a growing childcare crisis in Donegal. The planned creche, earmarked for the former River Club nightclub at Clochfin Castlefin, would cater for more than 100 children, ranging from six-month-old infants to after-school age. However, the project has been left in limbo due to an appeal lodged by Transport Infrastructure Ireland in August 2024. Dublin native Sarah Fitton, who is the director of the project, said the delay has left families without vital services and placed enormous strain on efforts to address the county's chronic childcare shortage. The Derry News this morning, admissibility of decisive evidence in trial of Soldier F examined. This is a critical process in this trial. The admissibility of decisive evidence in the trial of a former paratrooper accused of the murder of two men in Derry over 50 years ago is being examined. It centres around statements made by two other soldiers which claim their colleague fired shots at Glenfada Park North on January 30th, 1972, the day when members of the parachute regiment shot dead 13 civilians. Soldier F, who cannot be named by law, is accused of murdering James Ray and William McKinney. He's also charged with five attempted murders during the incident in Derry's Bogside area. Now, we heard from Mickey McKinney earlier on in this week, and he's of the view that this is really critical to whether or not this trial proceeds successfully or not. The trial opened at Belfast Crown Court, as you would know, on Monday, and heard the prosecution's opening statement as well as the statements of a number of people present at the shootings. On to the Nationals now, and every front page has a picture of young Daniel Arribaux. He's pictured for the first time. This is the young angel, this young child who went missing. His remains have now been found. And I was looking at the picture and I'm trying to make out, I'm thinking of pictures I've taken of our own children, and I'm looking at it and I'm trying to think what's going on behind his eyes. Is he curious? Is he wondering what mommy or daddy's doing? Is he sad? Is he worried? You know, you look at this picture and it's very hard to make out what he's feeling. And I can't help but sort of go down that road knowing what happened to the young man. Well, we don't know what happened, but unfortunately his life was cut tragically short. And the discovery of the Marines' remains of Daniel Arribaux in a field in Donabate, North Dublin, is expected to lead to at least one arrest, the nature of which will be determined by the results of the post-mortem, the Irish Times understands. While people who knew the three-year-old have cooperated with the Garda investigation to date, the discovery of Daniel's skeletal remains offer grounds for arrest, even if the post-mortem does not determine the cause of death or if it rules out foul play. Now, I can't see how conclusively skeletal remains, even with a very vigorous autopsy, could rule out foul play, because there are many ways in which one could die unnaturally that wouldn't be shown up by the examination of skeletal remains. But anyway, failure to notify the authorities of a person's death, inappropriate disposal of a body, and aiding of the concealment of remains are all criminal offences, though some of them only carry a fine, you know. Most of those crimes are not regarded as serious enough in legislation to warrant the extradition of a suspect from another country. This could hamper the Garda investigation, as one person of interest is abroad. Garda sources said the nature of any charges, as well as the timing or grounds for any arrests, would be influenced by the results of the post-mortem. And as soon as, we learned of that story and other stories of missing children, it was like, well, why aren't we checking up on these kids? If they've ever come before Tusla or any sort of arm of the state, because there are concerns over the welfare, you can't sign off on a case like that. You have to keep a track of them, and that would make common sense. That's what we should be doing, should we? Shouldn't we? But Norma Foley was asked something along these lines, and it's in the Irish Daily Star. And there is scope, she says, to create a check-in register for children along various stages of their development, a minister said, following the discovery of remains in the search for missing boy Daniel Arribaux. Children's Minister Norma Foley said she expected a rapid review of the case to be completed very shortly, adding it could be with her department by the end of the month. The work of Ireland's child and family agency Tusla, which had concluded engagement with Daniel's family in 2020 after providing support around a temporary fostering arrangement, has also come under scrutiny. Ms. Foley said well-being checks on children in 42,000 cases that were closed by Tusla while schools were closed during the pandemic would be independently managed. We need to chuck resources at this. We've stumbled across two cases of children that had come to the attention of Tusla in the past and now are dead. We can't have a situation where children can disappear and nobody notices. We can't have a society like that, can we? So whatever they have to do, they need to do. On to the Irish Independent now, and Cam Corla Verona Murphy has asked to meet all political party leaders to create a plan to combat the rise in threats against politicians. Miss Murphy's intervention comes after numerous threats were made against Taoiseach Simon Harris and his family in recent weeks. As the Dáil returned yesterday after the summer recess, Ms. Murphy made a statement in the chamber before leaders' questions began. She said, "The rise in threats was something that cannot be ignored. In recent times," she said, "we've witnessed an alarming rise in the serious threats and online abuse directed at a significant number of members of the Houses of the Oireachtas, of all parties and none, a phenomenon that can no longer be ignored," she said. And we're obviously seeing what's happening in the United States at the moment. Those on the right often referring to people being upset by what was being said as hurty words. You've heard all those phraseologies, haven't you? And now some of the greatest advocates for the restriction of free speech, but of course free speech is never always free of consequences. But whatever it takes, hopefully the left, the right, the centre meet to decide a way whereby we can all have differences of opinions, but we can be respectful and we don't dox people, we don't abuse people, we don't hassle people, we don't threaten people. We disagree with them, but we don't go down a route that eventually will end up in violence. It's inevitable the way things are going. Of course, we're still looking towards the budget. The Irish Daily Mail focus on this under a big story. Families now feel strain. Unless we act, this gap will be unmanageable. That's in relation to nursing home places. But putting an end to one-off measures in the budget will place a significant financial burden on Ireland's older population if welfare payments are not increased. That's what the ESRI will tell TDs today. Experts from the Economic and Social Research Institute think tank and Irish Fiscal Advisory Council are due to address the Oireachtas Budgetary Oversight Committee and warned the politicians of the risks to the economy ahead of Budget 2026. That's due on October 7th. Government has made clear it intends to replace one-off measures such as energy credits and double child benefit payments with targeted payments for those in need. Alan Barrett of the ESRI says while the temporary measures were successful in helping households deal with higher prices, their phasing out will cause affordability issues, particularly, he said, for the older population and those with disability if headline welfare payments fail to keep pace with income growth. I presume that's expenditure growth. The Farmers' Journal out today, of course. Well, they are the paper's about 3 inches thick because the ploughing championship is on. But their front page, older farmers should be paid a lump sum of €25,000 once they transfer the farm to a successor, the Commission on Generational Renewal in Farming has recommended. It's one of 31 recommendations made by the Minister for Agriculture this week by an expert committee or made to him, tasked with improving succession in Irish farming. Younger farmers should also be paid €25,000 in the form of an establishment payment, it advised. If adopted, such a move would see Ireland bring back installation aid, which ended following the economic crash of 2008. So what do you think about that? I mean, obviously farming is a business, right? So 25 grand for the older farmer, probably dad, 25 grand then for the younger farmer. And this is to presumably encourage succession and to make it more of an easier task. But why just farming? Why not groceries? Why not hardware? Why not tailoring? Why would it be specific to farming, some might say? You know, hundreds and thousands of people around the county play soccer, football, and the reason I'm making that differentiation is because this story is about heading the ball. I remember watching Tomorrow's World on the BBC about 35 years ago when they were talking about the dangers of heading a ball, and there were people on with, you know, these things that you could put around your head to lessen the impacts of it. Like, that was a long time ago they've been talking about this. But anyway, headers during football matches may lead to alterations within the brain. This according to new research. Scientists found that the most active players had much greater disruption in the brain's microstructure compared to the least active users. The study of amateur footballers found more frequent headers were linked to changes within the folds of the brain. US scientists say their findings do not prove that heading the ball causes brain damage. It only shows an association. But study author Dr. Michael Lipton said, while taking part in sports has many benefits, including possibly reducing the risk of cognitive decline, repetitive head impacts from contact sports like soccer may offset those potential benefits. So they have shown that, you know, heading the ball does alter the brain. And finally, in the Irish Sun this morning, the average daily state spend on housing international protection applicants and Ukrainians is, how much would you say it is? So this is per day that is being spent on housing and meeting our obligations, by the way, €5.3 million per day, effectively over €1 billion a year. New figures show the overall spend on the accommodation to the end of July stands at €1.13 billion. The total is made up of €683 million for accommodating IP applicants, and an additional $500,000 plus bar change for accommodating Ukrainians. At the current rate of spend, the state will pay out $1.17 billion on IP accommodation this year, an increase on the $1 billion and $5 million paid out in 2024. So $1 billion a year, which is remarkable when you think that that's the wiggle room in terms of, you know, tax concessions or one-off payments and what have you. It's a big, big spend, it has to be said, over $1 billion a year housing international protection applicants and Ukrainians. 5.3 million euro per day, according to the papers today. Now, the Minister for Children, Disability and Equality, Norma Foley, has encouraged survivors to apply for representation opportunities in three key structures. Applications are invited from survivors and affected persons who are interested in the four positions available on the National Centre for Remembrance Steering Group to be part of the decision-making process. To learn more about this, we're joined by Patricia Carey, the National Advocate for Survivors. Good morning to you, Patricia. Thank you for your time.
Good morning to you and to your listeners.
Okay, can you tell us a little bit more about this initiative?
Well, the National Centre for Remembrance is going to be based in the site of the last Magdalen Laundry to close. It actually closed in the late 1990s, which your listeners will probably find surprising. And this centre is going to remember all of those who spend time in institutions in Magdalen Laundries, mother and baby homes, industrial and reformatory schools.
And what opportunities are available?
So we're asking for survivors to come forward to sit on the decision-making body, which is going to be making the decisions about what goes into that centre. There's going to be a museum run by the National Museum of Ireland, an archive repository run by the National Archives. And it's really important that survivors are represented in that decision-making body. So we're asking for survivors and affected persons, those who spent time in institutions, those who were separated from their families through adoption or maybe sent abroad for the purposes of adoption, to come forward and express an interest in that.
And in fairness to the Minister, it is she that announced this, but it did come off the back of feedback from survivors, presumably that they wanted more representation or more influence on any future directions.
Absolutely. And to be honest, it's down to survivors themselves that this national centre is going to exist, because they campaigned for many years that the site in Sean McDermott Street wouldn't be sold to developers or sold so that the government would take it over. So I have to pay tribute to those survivors who campaigned for many years. So it is now critical that we hear what survivors have said over the last year at a round of consultations, both in Ireland and abroad, that they want to be sitting making decisions about what goes into this centre, which essentially is about their lives.
Now, the window is closing, applications close this Friday, but I know we're doing this piece because we're very keen to have Donegal representatives or an interest from Donegal in the whole process. So maybe you can make a direct appeal so that people know it's they that you're talking to. You know, I know you sort of gave a brief outline, but who do you want to hear from and how might they get involved or indeed just get further information, albeit, of course, you know, we're towards the end of the closing of this window?
Well, what I would say is that we need representation from people all over Ireland. We know that in every county in Ireland, there were institutions, including in Donegal and in the Northwest. So we're asking people who were maybe spent time in those institutions themselves. In some instances, it may be their family members in mother and baby and county homes, Magdalen Laundries, people who were affected by adoption and forced family separation. They can ring the department. It's a Dublin number, 01-647-3200. So that's a Dublin number, 647-3200. Obviously, there's some flexibility. If people want a hard copy of that application form, it's simple to fill in. They can also contact the department at National Centre. That's all one word, National Centre at dcde.gov.ie. And I would particularly appeal, we want to hear from people who maybe previously have not come forward, people who'd like to talk to the National Museum of Ireland to get involved in what is actually going to go into that museum to represent the time that they spent in institutions or their experience of being separated from their families.
Now, of course, we can't expect everyone to write down that information first time. So we retain that here if anyone wants to call us, and we can pass that on as they'd be more familiar with our contact details. Okay, Patricia, thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Take care of yourself. Bye. That's Patricia Carey, the National Advocate for Survivors there. Right. Let me see. I just have to put that into context before I read it out. Any word of the tailback moving in Drumkeen? I think that was read out on Lee Gucci's show. 25 minutes people were waiting to get through there. There is roadworks, of course. I'm not sure what's going on, but another listener says the roadworks at Drumkeen are an absolute disgrace. So mad at how late I am now, Lou. Surely this work could be done at night. Another, I've just spent 45 minutes in the traffic from Ballybofey to Letterkenny because of the roadworks in Drumkeen. It's so frustrating. I noticed a number of cars leave the main route and go a side road. Why can't these side roads have road signs to advise people of an alternative route? I suppose there's consequences for sending people down certain routes. Maybe residents on those routes would start giving out about the contractors or the council. I don't know, but people very frustrated, particularly this morning. Right, now let me see. The one-way system in Rathmullen has been in place, which he thinks works really well, but recently was changed back to being two-way without any announcement to businesses or locals, people going the wrong way because they've been used to it being a one-way system. Does anyone know what is happening since the locals don't appear to? That comes in from a business owner in Rathmullen. If anyone has any information in that, let us know. Right, let's get back to that traffic. Marie joins me. Hi, Marie.
Hi.
So where are you? Or where were you?
I was at the coming out from Letterkenny at the Dry Arch, and I was heading towards Ballybofey. And I've just got moved now, but I was sat for half an hour.
All right, and what's going on? Like, I mean, the traffic delays are
it's
huge. Yeah, I know, but wonder.
Yeah
but what's changed? Because, you know, people seem to be suffering far more now than they were in previous days.
I don't know, because Tuesday I was up this way and it wasn't as bad, but today's very bad because they've got a system, you know, where it's go start, and obviously the queues are getting longer, and there was probably two go starts, you know, ahead of me that got through, but I got through on the third try.
Right, okay. Very frustrating. And if anyone's trying to make work, school, hospital appointments...
Yeah, because I'm late for work now.
Are you? Okay. But yeah. You have a good excuse and you can play this recording back if they don't believe you.
I have, yes.
What do we do, though? I mean, the road needs doing up, obviously.
I don't know why it can't be done at night time.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of tried to make the argument yesterday that, you know, maybe it's to do with the cost of the contract then, but this level of convenience or inconvenience, sorry, means something has to be done.
Oh, it does, yeah, because really, I mean, I'll have to plan ahead now and maybe leave half an hour earlier for work. I'll leave at 8:30, I'll probably have to leave at 8 to make sure I get there on time now, just and, while this is going on.
And the working day is long enough as it is, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Without then having to sort of kick off much, much earlier. All right, very frustrating. Yeah. You're through, though, now?
I'm through now, yeah.
All right. Have you looked at any alternative routes, or is there any?
Not unless I go all the way through Rafo, you know, and come that way towards Ballybofey, around that way.
That sounds like a whole handling. All right, listen, Marie, I'm glad you're through.
Okay.
Take care of yourself. But how long, do you know how long they're scheduled to be working on that road for?
I don't know, because when they were doing it before, they had a sign up, you know, over the summer holidays when the schools were off, and it said 9 weeks, but there's no sign up for this one.
No, that was
they gave you warning before to say, that was up by the school, and it gave you warning to say roadworks for 9 weeks, but there was no, you know, signs to say that this is going on and how long it'll take either.
That's okay. All right, Marie, listen, safe onward journey to work, and if your boss is listening, or maybe you're the boss for all I know, Don't give out. All right, Marie, take care. Bye-bye. Thanks so much indeed. Right. An emailer says, I'm writing because I need Highland's help with a very serious, very dangerous situation that's going on in the estate where I live. I live in Ard... What is that estate called, Caroline? What's that estate called? I can't quite make it out. The estate, it's Salaharane. Okay, that's fine. Well, it's an estate in Salagh Grain, Letterkenny, behind the hostel, up a very steep hill. I live in a building at the very back, which is completely under council control. We all pay rent to the council. The problem is we've got no outside lights. The street lights are there, 12 in total, but they aren't on, and the entire estate is in complete blackness. From here on, it's only going to get darker earlier. We can't get anyone to help us. The lights are privately owned, so we can't ring any company to deal with this issue. So we tried to get a response, as we always do. This is the response. The matter has been referred to the developer, owner of the estate, for follow-up and repair. The street lighting requires upgrading before new lamps can be installed. The developer is currently making arrangements with the infrastructure provider to have this work carried out. So we got on to the council, and that came from the council. Right, so the there are plans in motion, but I would advise emailer, if you can, to get back in touch with us in 3 or 4 weeks if nothing has moved in that regard, because... And I'm not questioning the motivation of the statement, but that just could be kicking the can down the road. We really need to know for sure what's going on and when those works will be completed. Right, Kathleen, do you think people are a bit impatient and maybe not planning enough for important infrastructural work like roadworks? What's your view on people complaining about the big delays trying to get through Drumkeen?
Good morning, Greg. I know this was a scheduled roadworks because the council put it up that it was going to be scheduled. This particular junction above the Rosie Bonner's pub, as we call it, Rosie's pub, is a very dangerous junction at the moment because people are coming out from Letterkenny and going down the convoy direction. There's been quite a few accidents in the last few months on this particular junction. The road surfacing going out onto the N13 was ridiculous, to be quite honest. So the council have to do the road repairs. I'm sorry if that lady got delayed. And there is other ways, you know what I mean, to get from Letterkenny to Balbuffet. If you put it into Google, it'll send you a different direction. And it will send you over the back road, because I live on this back road, and at the minute, there is an awful lot of people that have taken it since Monday morning when it was announced over the, public. It was announced publicly that these roadworks were going to be ongoing for the rest of this week. So it's not... I'm sorry if she's delayed, but, you know what I mean? You can't have roads without doing roadworks. I'm sorry.
So you're saying we can't complain about the state of the roads and then be upset when they're
not allowing the people to repair them? That's just my personal opinion. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe people possibly don't agree with me, yes, because they've got delayed. But that's life, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And also, too, just because people don't agree with you, it doesn't mean you're wrong either, by the way. That's one thing we need to remember. What were you going to say about people suggesting we'll do them at night then?
Well, that's more expensive, so that's more money. So then you get less roads repaired.
Yep, okay.
You know, that's my outlook on that, and I would rather get the roads repaired, allow a little extra time. The kids are all in school at this stage, and if you're going to work, I'm sorry, you can't be going on lastminute.com. That's my opinion on it.
Okay, Kathleen,
I'm
listen.
Sorry, but like,
it's fine.
Like, Greg, it's like going, from, at the moment, from Letterkenny to Manor Cunningham. I was in Letterkenny yesterday, not comparing it, but from the Polestar roundabout to the Dry Arch roundabout was bumper to bumper. Mm. That was at 3 o'clock in the day, you know, coming out of the town. So this is only going to be a very minor inconvenience for people. It's only going to be this week. And unless they decide to resurface another bit of the road, which I hope they do, if it needs doing, because it's going into treacherous type of year. So the more safe we can have our roads, the better.
Kathleen, thank you for your point of view. I do appreciate it. Good morning, Greg. In regards to the traffic in Drumkeen, I'm actually late for a hospital appointment. It was already mentioned the works should be done at night. It's dangerous. It's a dangerous road at the best of times. Adding hundreds of annoyed and disgruntled drivers trying to get to where they should be is not going to help. Somebody in the county council or whoever has planned this work needs to cop on a bit. Maybe we might get some sort of a statement from the council just as it relates to daytime works versus nighttime works, etc. You tell them, Catherine, well said, says the listener. People should have common sense to leave the house in plenty of time for their journey. That comes in from Kevin. Another awful traffic delays in Drumkeen this morning. And I think to give people credit, they know the work needs to be done. They welcome the work being done. But it's just they think maybe it should be done at night or maybe managed a little bit better. We're still waiting on an update at McClay's Corner Crater. A lot of people were onto us yesterday, particularly drivers of big vehicles. This is a crater at McClay's Corner there in Ballybuffet, and it's been a hole for a long time now, and it's a very, very poor piece of road. So whilst we've got millions being spent up in Drumkeen, which is fantastic, I wonder can the lads in Drumkeen spare a wheelbarrow of tar and chip just for the McClay's Corner crater. If you could, it'd be fantastic. A caller says, seems that the council can only organise nighttime works for cutting down trees. That's a point that's come in. That's a point that's come in on a number of occasions. Coming from Manor onto the roundabout, if you are coming from Derry, you're meant to stay in the left lane for Lifford. There are arrows. Sorry, I thought, yes, but the road, I believe, I thought they were on about the road up at the hotel. That's what I thought that question was about yesterday. My mistake if I got that wrong. David here, Greg, I'm a driving instructor and that's completely wrong. It's the Manor roundabout. Sorry, I was talking about I should really be very careful in matters of road safety as well. I was under the impression that the texter was on about the roundabout up at Letterkenny at the hotel there. But I'll read this out just so we're absolutely sure. David here, Greg, I'm a driving instructor and that's completely wrong at the Manor roundabout. You cannot come around in the left lane towards Letterkenny. That lane is for Lifford Strabane only, which I know. I just thought it was the wrong... a different roundabout. Ree McClay's Corner, never mind the pothole, where is the forward-thinking or intellectual people who can see a simple solution to a lot of traffic issues of Ballybuffet and Stranorlar? McClay's building and two other properties besides are for sale. Tumble them, put in a major junction with turn-off lanes or even a roundabout. Traffic would flow more efficiently and a hell of a lot cheaper than a bypass that may never happen. Good morning, Greg. I just heard you mention traffic on the dual carriageway there and wondered, can you clarify something for me? My daughter was coming from the Manor direction this morning and going onto the carriageway heading towards Letterkenny, right? This is the actual text where I may have got things wrong. So they were on about a different roundabout to the roundabout that I was on about. So my apologies there. Again, Greg's comments on the Manor roundabout was inaccurate earlier. The road is clearly marked. There was a prosecution several years ago of a driver taking the left lane from the Derry side but continued around the roundabout towards Letterkenny. They got off on a technical point that the road was not clearly marked, and it is now again mea culpa. I should double check stuff. I genuinely thought it was the roundabout up at the Clanry Hotel, isn't it? The Clanry Hotel, yeah. Right, okay, keep your texts and comments coming into us. I do appreciate it. Lots to catch up from yesterday. A lot of wrist slapping of me, which is justified. No problem with that. We'll be back with more after these. Downgraded defective concrete homeowners have escalated decisions to the EU Commission. We're joined on the programme by Marty McElhenney, who's a spokesperson for a downgraded group of many, many homeowners affected by this. Good morning to you, Marty. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it as always.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, Joe. And good morning, listeners.
Yeah, that's Joe Morgan, who is going to be joining us shortly. I just want to recap briefly because we're kind of at a milestone here. Who are downgraded homeowners and how are they being affected in this scheme?
Defector concrete block downgraded homeowners are a group of 87 since yesterday. Homeowners from Donegal who were required to engage IS 465 registered chartered engineers, and this was from a list provided by Donegal County Council. This was in order to access the Irish State's Defective Concrete Blocks grant scheme. We did this at significant cost, €6,000-7,000. These engineers came out to our homes. They conducted thorough building condition assessments, and taking into consideration the scientific analysis they had, they determined our home should be demolished. With this chartered engineers report, we then applied to this scheme. Some of our homeowners applied as early as September 2020. That's 5 years ago right now. We then, with the enactment of the Enhanced Effective Concrete Blocks Grant Scheme, we became transitional applicants, and we were moved to the housing agency, and they took charge of our applications. And then we found out through email notifications that we're not having our option one, which is demolish, which our engineers told us we had to have. You know, they determined in their expert opinion our home should be demolished. And we were instead given lesser partial remediation options, which leave defective concrete in the blocks of our homes. This was done without anybody ever visiting our homes. So some people applied in September 2020. And that whole interim, these homes continued to deteriorate and nobody visited. So we have.
So you have an opportunity to then appeal that downgrading. But this is where the problem is. You're in this vacuum whereby the appeals have gone in and nothing is happening.
Yeah. Well, appeals were submitted since March 2024 by downgraded Donegal homeowners. It's September 25 now, that's 18 months. Not one downgrade appeal has been heard. The appeals rest on the basis, you know, we've all been downgraded on the hypothesis that the blocks retained are of adequate compressive strength and not at risk of freeze thaw. This is disproven. So every single home has been misdiagnosed, and the pyrotite present in all our blocks has not been considered when they were legally mandated to consider it. The housing agency will, in its analysis and deliberation, take into consideration the presence of pyrotite. Mm-hmm. They didn't. So the appeals rest on this.
Have you had any information as to where this delay is coming from? The housing minister knows about this. The local authority knows about it. It's being raised at monthly defective concrete blocks committee meetings. Now, obviously, the housing agency don't turn up more than they do, but we know they're aware of it. So have you been given any reason as to why? Are they waiting on the upgraded science and then reapply that to these cases? I mean, are you being given any info at all?
Our appeals have been submitted in line with the legislation, and our appeals are valid as it stands right now. The new IS 465 means nothing to the legal process that we're engaged in already. So we need our appeals heard because that's the only legal pathway we have to have our original engineer's determinations reinstated. But you've asked if there's been any update. There's been no update at all. Nothing at all. We keep getting that the appeals are statutorily independent, but that's a flaw in itself, because ultimately it's the Minister for Housing and his department and office that does have accountability and oversight for the appeals panel. So this untenable delay of up to 18 months is just adding to homeowners' anxiety, stress.
See, I just don't get the logic of it, because, you know, the scheme is progressing for some, obviously. It's a multi-year, multi-billion euro scheme. We're talking about the shortfall between full demolition and partial remediation. So we're not talking, you know, the full amount per house. I don't understand the logic of the delay. Or even if you were told that, look, we are absolutely overwhelmed, we're hiring more staff, we're going to be working on that shortly. But there's nothing there, and I don't understand why, because it's not really even worth the government penny-pinching on these 87 homes.
Yeah, at this stage, you know, it's abundantly clear, it's crystal clear to everybody that they are purposely stalling their appeals.
But why?
I don't know why. Yeah. Let's.
Do you know what I mean? For the points of outlined.
Our appeals are right. They're valid. The appeals rest on serious and significant errors. We've exposed and highlighted serious and significant errors. They were legally mandated to consider pyrotite. We all have pyrotite in the blocks of our homes. This is part of this is the reason we've escalated now to the EU. You know, EU regulations very clearly reference limits on minerals such as mica, pyrite and pyrotite. And the housing agency and the department at this stage have completely ignored it.
Mm-hmm. Joe Morgan joins us now. Joe, of course, brought the first complaint to the EU. And whether or not this actually, Joe, I think the publicity as much as anything is important here, rather than necessarily, you know, the government feeling they must comply with an EU directive, whatever it might be. But how important, well, give us the nature of the complaint to the EU, if you don't mind, and how it will progress and its importance.
Sure, Greg, and good morning to you. Long time since we've spoken. So look, Marty approached me earlier this year just in terms of trying to understand if there was an EU angle relative to the downgraded homeowners. And look, I've spoke to her on a number of occasions since, and it would be my opinion, Greg, that there is, and you know, to your point initially, you know, part of this is bringing additional publicity, obviously, to the plight that these particular homeowners are in. But I do believe there's an EU angle to it as well. Marty alluded to it there. The housing agency are point blank refusing to consider pyrotite in these desktop assessments that they've done. And listen, as an aside, we've had desktop studies before, and we know where that got us relative to the root cause of the issue. So the fact that they're employing this process again beggars belief, to be quite frank. But the lack of consideration for pyrotite, it actually ignores the concrete product regulation, right? Because as Marty already alluded to, pyrotite particularly is quite clearly and actually quite uniquely referenced in the concrete product directive. And the reason that it's uniquely referenced is because it is highly unstable and highly reactive, right? And particularly consequential, if you like, if it's in excessive amounts within aggregate that's in the concrete blocks for construction. So given that the concrete product regulation stipulates that there is a need for pyrotite consideration, given that the housing agency is not doing that, and in parallel there are existing infringement proceedings initiated by the EU Commission against the Irish government for not adequately implementing the concrete product regulation, that would say to me that there is a case and there will be interest at EU Commission level relative to this.
They haven't looked at these appeals to say, right, okay, sorry, we got that wrong. We will either, you know, we'll reinstate the original recommendations. Like, we haven't got to the point, have we, where we know the disregarding pyrite. We know that they made the mistake and then downgraded these homeowners. But in the absence of them actually, one appeal being heard and them announcing that, oh, right, okay, that was a desktop exercise that was an error, they're not even progressing to that point. So we're still arguing.
They've gone through the desktop assessment, right? They've taken on board reports from IS 465 Chartered Engineers, which have recommended demolition, and they've overturned those decisions. Okay. And in that process have failed to consider the presence of pyrotite. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, are not properly implementing the concrete product regulation. So I think we've got that far. But to your point, no appeals have been heard yet, right? And that's the reason that me and Marty are on here talking to you today. Yeah. That's the reason Marty approached me. There's nothing progressing. And look, I've been through the rebuild process myself, so I understand the stress associated with that, but I can quite frankly state I can't imagine the stress that this particular cohort of families are going through who are trying to engage with a scheme
to remediate.
And it's just
important that this is not just an inconvenience. You know, we've got, and I speak to them all the time, younger people particularly who have no history of asthma or breathing difficulties starting to develop that. Older people that should be able to go through this process as stressful it is and enjoy a number of years in a, you know, rebuilt property. They're not being allowed to do that. They're being stuck in this property. That's just simply not fair. Did you want to come back in maybe for the final word there, Marty?
Yeah, we have pensioners and we have families with young children. This is horrific. This is actually cruel and a very, very unfair situation to be in when all we've wanted was to try and engage with the scheme and move on with our lives. So it feels like, you know, our human rights here are being impacted. There's no way around it. You cannot continue to allow us to live in this limbo. You know, ultimately, the decisions, they are all scientifically flawed and legally flawed. The housing agency ignored the presence of pyrotite, and in doing so, they are ignoring EU concrete regulations. There's no justification for this. Mm. You know, what is the reason for the stalls and delays? We have IS 465 registered engineers. They stand over their decisions that our homes should be demolished. They helped us submit our appeals. Our homes should be demolished. And then you have desktop engineers who, you know, they didn't even visit the homes. All the further deterioration was never, ever considered. Mm-hmm. The original engineers were right. They stuck within the confines. They were able to make the correct decision, even with the flawed IS 465 standard. Okay.
All right,
it needs to be reinstated, and the legal pathway to do that is the appeals, and hopefully escalating now to the EU will highlight this and highlight how we've been treated by the Irish government and how we continue to be treated and the limbo we reside in.
It just feels to me that over the last number of weeks and now, and perhaps even going forward, this is more of a headline story in the, you know, the places of power in Europe rather than our own parliament, which is an interesting development. Thank you very much for that, Marty. I do appreciate it. That's Marty McElhenney, DCB downgraded homeowner. Joe Morgan, who is elevating this to EU level. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Greg.
Take care of yourself. I really do appreciate it. We'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show this Thursday after the news.